From KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Kayla DeRoche. Coming up this week, the Dungeness crab season closed 3 weeks early in Southeast this summer. We find out why. And a lot of Alaska salmon goes to China for processing, yet farm salmon is more common in Chinese markets. One University of Alaska professor looks at whether or not consumers would be willing to purchase wild Alaska salmon instead. That and more coming up on this week's Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs.
The commercial harvest for Dungeness crab in Southeast Alaska this summer was the lowest in several decades. But it might not be a complete bust. As Angela Denning reports from KFSK in Petersburg, the harvest numbers only tell part of the story.
The summer season for dungies closed early in Southeast, 3 weeks early. I sat down with Kelly Wood, a crab biologist with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, to find out what happened.
How did it go this year?
The thing is, Dungeness crab in Southeast are tricky because state managers don't know a lot about them. The crab are on a 4 to 5 year life cycle, and the commercial fishery is expected to fluctuate accordingly. But there are no stock assessment surveys, so biologists rely on commercial harvests to track the population. Most years, the population seems healthy enough to hold a 2-month fishery. But this summer season closed early because the harvests weren't meeting the threshold set in state regulations. The season brought in 1.3 million pounds, which is the lowest harvest in over 30 years. The historical summer average is 2.7 million. Since the season was cut weeks short, it's not surprising the overall harvest was low. The situation is kind of a catch-22. Managers, like Wood, have to close the fishery because of numbers, but now they won't get a picture of what a full harvest would have looked like.
I think overall, though, in general, things weren't as good. And a lot of that could be due to the fact that the crab were just not on the bite.
Not on the bite refers to the crabs molting when they lose their shell and are not hungry. Dungeness crab fishing is all about luring crab into baited pots when they are hungry. And crab without a hard shell or soft crab have no value anyway. Wood says there has been some anecdotal evidence from fishermen reporting light-colored crab near the end of the fishery. That would indicate crab that recently molted. So this summer's low harvest could be due to a late molt. It could mean that the crab are there. It's just bad timing.
You know, after they molt, they bury in the mud and they don't come out. And they're not hungry. They just sit there. And if it was a later molt, they probably were just buried during this fishery.
The crabs stay buried for about 4 to 6 weeks. Biologists believe that Dungeness crab molt 1 or 2 times a year, but they don't really know. Exactly how Dungeness crab function in regional waters is pretty speculative.
There's a lack of life history data in Southeast Alaska.
And they don't know why the crab might have been molting late. Temperatures were a little colder this year than in recent years.
It could have been due to colder waters, later phytoplankton blooms. You know, there's a lot that goes into these molts. Temperature, salinity, nutrition. It's really hard to say.
It's only the second time in over 15 years that the summer season closed early. In 2013, managers closed the season a week early when there was a high percentage of soft-shelled crab. Managers are still evaluating how much of this summer's harvest could have been soft-shelled. If there's a lot, like in 2013, then this fall's fishery could be normal or better than normal. Managers would, by regulation, open up the fall season for at least a 30-day fishery. This summer, Dungeness crab was harvested by 184 permits. Crab were purchased at an average price of $3.09 per pound. The value of the summer season catch was $4 million, close to $2 million less than last summer. District 8, which includes waters around Petersburg and Wrangell, saw the largest harvest of nearly 400,000 pounds. In Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
About a third of the salmon caught in Alaska gets shipped to China for processing. But a recent consumer study suggests that at least some of that wild salmon should stay in the Chinese markets. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Elizabeth Jenkins has more.
Angie Jung didn't grow up eating much salmon near her hometown of Beijing, China. When she did, she ate farm salmon, prepared raw, sashimi style.
After I moved up to Alaska, I realized wild salmon, because this is different than the farm-raised salmon, which is dominating in China market.
Jung is now an associate professor of economics at the University of Alaska Anchorage. And she says most Chinese consumers are familiar with Alaska salmon. It's been popularized by fish oil pills for decades, but few have ever dined on it. What you can find in China markets is farm salmon from places like Norway and Chile. Jung came across wild Alaska salmon only once in a market in Hong Kong. And that salmon was over $50 a pound.
That's very expensive. So that triggered me to think, if we can export more Alaska wild salmon to China market, especially the large mainland market, definitely there is a potential.
Most of the wild salmon that's sent to China is processed and shipped back to the U.S. or onto Europe. Jung says almost none of it stays in China. So she wanted to know if Chinese consumers would be interested in eating it rather than just exporting. For her recent study, she had graduate students interview shoppers at 30 different stores in three large Chinese cities. And they found that, yes, the majority would buy wild Alaska salmon, just not at such a steep price. Jung says if more of that fish were to hit the stores, it could ultimately lower the cost. Still, she thinks that part of what's driving the new interest is China's changing demographics. More Chinese are joining the middle class, and they want to know where their food comes from.
Due to the environmental pollution and the number of food safety scandals in China in recent years, the consumers also have growing concerns about food safety and the possible contamination of their food supply.
Jung says when people in China imagine Alaska, they think pristine waters. But there's still a ways to go before the salmon actually shows up in the stores. Jung thinks small seafood processors across the state should form a coalition to explore the option. And in a few years, wild Alaska salmon sashimi could start popping up on the menu in China. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska's fishermen and their family. AMSEA at amsea.org or 907-747-3287.
Some Alaskans fill their freezers by dip netting for salmon. The fish is healthy and nutritious, but is fishing a cost-effective solution for food security? Ann Hillman with the Solutions Desk found out.
On the shores of the Kasilof River, Bradley Fredrickson from Trapper Creek pushes his 5-foot-wide metal dip net into the water. He stands chest-deep in the icy cold water, holding the end of the long metal pole.
So now you just wait?
He instantly catches a fish and heads back to shore with his net, ready to bonk the salmon on its head. 20-year-old Fredrickson, his parents, grandma, and siblings all know what it's like to be hungry.
There was winters where I had nothing but fish and potatoes and rice, and that was literally all that we ate all winter long, every meal.
Many summers, he's helped his family fill the freezer by sport fishing. He'd drive 20 to 30 miles round trip to local rivers, but he was limited to 3 fish per day. It took Fredrickson weeks to fill the freezer, and the fish weren't awesome.
It's good, but then the meat and the fish start to deteriorate because of the time and how long they're in the water.
The other adults in the house can't fish because of disabilities and looking after small children. So this year, Fredrickson decided to take a day off work from his construction job and join his friend for dip netting on the Kasilof.
And so your boss is totally cool with giving you time to come.
100%. He was like, good, do it all. He's like, go fill your freezer. I just did. And I was like, awesome. Like, I'm so excited now.
But does it pay off to miss work and drive more than 550 miles round trip just to get fish? His friend joins him on the beach and they start doing the math.
Oh, really? 650 a pound with the head on.
Okay.
So
they think they'll need to spend about $150 in gas total. They're camping on the beach for free, not spending a lot on food. They figure they'd only need to catch 5 salmon to make it worthwhile. In only a few hours, Fredrickson has already caught 8. His limit for his 6-person family is 75. They aren't the only ones doing the math. So are researchers at the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, like Marilyn Kostick with the Subsistence Division.
And it economically makes sense and nutritionally makes sense for residents of the state to engage in subsistence activities. And that also includes urban residents as well.
She says you can't put a monetary value on the communal and cultural aspects of subsistence harvesting. But researchers do know that fishing pays off. And in some communities, people can use their food stamps to buy subsistence gear, like fishing nets, making it even more affordable, though the benefit is rarely used that way. In 2014, the most recently available data, Alaskans harvested nearly 46 million pounds of wild foods. That includes fish, game, and plants. In rural areas, that averaged out to about 275 pounds per person. In urban areas, it was only about 19. If all of that food was replaced by store-bought items at $6 a pound, it would cost more than $275 million. So is dip netting on the already crowded shores of local rivers the solution for statewide food insecurity in Alaska? Kostick says even though it can easily pay off, it's not for everyone.
You know, a lot of folks, they don't have time. They don't have the interest to go out and harvest their own fish, to go down and use the personal use fishery. But those fish are still being caught out there.
Alaska's commercial fisheries are pulling in nearly 99% of the state's wild-caught fish and game. Kostick says tapping into that
And making it readily available and easily accessible to residents, I think that really has the potential to bolster food security in the state.
But even if that happens, some residents, like Fredrickson, will still be hitting the shores, harvesting their freshly caught fish.
If you couldn't hunt and fish, would you have enough food in your household, you think?
Oh, no. No. Not even close. Like, not even close. Yeah. Like, it would be bad.
So, he keeps fishing. Want to hear more great ideas? You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and NPR One, or go to alaskapublic.org/solutions. For the Solutions Desk, I'm Ann Hillman. Thanks for listening.
The Shunack tribe just won a grant that will allow it to continue studying an invasive species in Kodiak, the signal crayfish. It's part of the tribe's efforts to determine what kind of threat, if any, crayfish pose to subsistence resources. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Tribal Wildlife Grant of almost $200,000 will fund efforts to look at the crayfish in the Buskin watershed. Tribal biologist Kelly Kruger says the crayfish are from the Pacific Northwest, but have been in the watershed for at least 20 years. She says the 2-year project will include tracing the animals' movements, population numbers, and eating habits. For instance, whether they're snacking on dead salmon carcasses, salmon eggs, or just insects.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by AK Teach, now enrolling K-12 homeschool students throughout the state of Alaska. Creating partnerships that are flexible, family-friendly, and unique to your child. More information is available at AKTeach or at 907-942-0667.
And that's all for this week's Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from KFSK's Angela Denning in Petersburg, the Solution Desk's Ann Hillman in Anchorage, and the Alaska Energy Desk's Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Kayla DeRoche.